We spent over $100 million to renovate Empower Field, the old Mile High Stadium, just about 20 or so years ago. And now we're talking about spending billions of dollars on a new stadium. We hear in the media of possibly the first man in history to become a trillionaire. I read about billionaires renting out $200 million yachts for vacationing with their friends. The amount of wealth and excess is bar none in the history of the world today. There are more billionaires than ever in our country, and that's happened in the last few decades at a time when there is greater poverty, greater flight and migration of people escaping extreme poverty, government instability, communism, violence, the effects of the change of the climate and the environment leading to the flooding of their lands and weather that doesn't allow them to grow crops. The extreme of poverty really is contrasted with the extreme of wealth in our world today, now more than ever. But maybe you're not a billionaire. If you are, please let me know. We're looking for money to finish off the grant, the work we're doing. Maybe you're not a multi-millionaire. And again, if you are, please see me after Mass. But what about our money? Today's gospel and the first reading really challenge us to think about how God cares and what's God's way of thinking and what's God's focus of love. In the book of the prophet Amos, Amos comes at a time when Israel is experiencing extreme prosperity. Their enemies have been conquered and they live in great comfort. And he condemns them. It's not sinful to be rich. Let me be very clear. It's what we do with the money God has given us that is sinful or virtuous. Lying on beds of ivory, stretched comfortably on their couches, eating lambs and calves. This is extreme wealth at that time. Lambs and calves were either offered to God in sacrifice, the best of the best, or the lambs were allowed to grow so they could shear them and use their wool, the calves as well. Even though the meat is tender when they're young, you wait for them to grow fully so that there's more meat to go around. But they're sacrificing them at the most expensive moments of their lives to eat as lavishly as possible. And then you have them drinking wine from bowls, not cups, bowls. The excess and the extreme is extraordinary. And the prophet Amos calls them out because they are not made ill, quote, by the collapse of Joseph. You are sickening yourselves with wine and drink, and yet your hearts are not sickened by the poverty of your brother. Therefore, now they shall be the first to go into exile, and their wanton revelry shall be done away with. He warns them, this woe, be aware. How can you be sickened by excess and not sickened by the poverty of your brother? The gospel today is meant to go along with the first reading, as it is every Sunday and every day of the week. In fact, we hear from the gospel of Luke a parable. Lazarus is not a real person. Jesus is speaking a parable, but the imagery and the story and the message is the same. Purple, the most expensive color of clothes you could possibly wear, and linen, the most expensive material you could possibly wear. And the rich man is never mentioned because he's not important. Lazarus is. And the horrific part of this parable that Christ is highlighting for the Pharisees is the fact that Lazarus is at his door. He's at his door. But Lazarus will not open it. Excuse me, the rich man will not open the door. And meanwhile, Lazarus is starving, and being licked by dogs is not a cute American thing. You know, YouTube videos or TikToks of dogs licking you in the face, gross, and people kissing them on the mouth, disgusting. Personally, it is a sign of absolute poverty and filth. Dogs were considered back then filthy, disgusting animals, and they're licking his sores. Meanwhile, this man has so much food and drink, it's falling onto the floor. Lazarus would have loved to have eaten just that, but the rich man doesn't open the door to him. He leaves him outside. And the apathy of this rich man toward Lazarus is heroic, extraordinary in a bad sense, because he knows Lazarus's name. He knows his name, and he still won't open the door to him. He still won't even sweep up the scraps on the ground to give him something to eat. And the hardness of his heart is equally extraordinary and deeply disturbing, because even after death, he looks to Lazarus like an errand boy. Come and bring Lazarus here to me to quench my thirst. Go and send Lazarus to my brothers. Lazarus is an errand boy to him. Rightfully so, he's in torment. But Abraham speaks to the rich man and reminds him, right? You were wealthy and did nothing for your brother. And now you will receive justice, while your brother will be rewarded. Richness is not a guarantee of hell. It's what we do with our money. Nor is poverty a guarantee of heaven. It's whether or not we live the commandments. But the heart of God could not be more clear from the prophet Amos and from Jesus' own parable. He has a particular love and attention to the poor, and he will not let their poverty go unnoticed, especially for those who have more than enough. Last week, I mentioned the Catechism, paragraph 2446, quoted St. John Chrysostom and even cited it on our website under homilies, beneath the homily, where John Chrysostom says that giving to the poor is not an act of charity. It's an act of justice. The poor have a right to food, to shelter, to health care, to stability, to a living wage, to meaningful work. And when we don't provide that from our excess, we steal from them. We are literally robbing them. These are the words of St. John Chrysostom, not my own. And it's rooted in the scriptures themselves, because everything that we have is a gift from God. And the only thing that is mine and mine alone that God didn't give me and that I did all by myself are my sins. Every breath, every heartbeat, every gift, every penny is his gift to me. The question is, how will I use it? At a time when we should responsibly save and prepare for retirement, are we even more responsibly saving up a treasure in heaven by caring for our brother who is next to us? Because when we help them through our means, whatever that is, we're not doing charity. We're simply doing justice. They are our brother. They are outside our door. They are hungry, and they need our help. Now, I grew up in this country in an upper middle class, mostly white neighborhood. Family was Republican for generations, and I know the argument. They're lazy. They should work for themselves. I worked hard for this money. This is my money. Why don't they get a job? They're mentally ill. They're a drug addict. They need to get cleaned up first. I can't help them. But the scriptures don't have conditions for helping the poor. God doesn't have conditions. One of the things that I was proud to inherit when I came to this parish as pastor is every Tuesday and Friday, we put together sacks of food that don't require any preparation or very minimal preparation, just adding hot water, for people to come in Tuesdays and Fridays, no questions asked, and have something to eat. And we are always short of volunteers. And we're always happy to get more and more food and spend more and more money on that food. And there are no requirements. We ask them to take only one bag, but sometimes they take more than that, and we just simply let them do so. We often run out after Tuesdays or on Fridays, and people come and they're hungry and we have nothing to give them. And so Cindy is kind enough to stop what she's doing to help maintain our property and put bags together for shortage of volunteers. There's so much more that we can do as a parish, and I dream about one day. Not because they've earned it, not because they're good, not because they're grateful. Not everyone who comes and takes a sack lunch for free from us says thank you, but simply because that is Christ. They are our brothers. And how can I have a refrigerator full of food and they go without water and the basic necessities? Many of them struggle with mental illness and our government fails to care for them properly. They struggle with addiction and there's nowhere for them to go for effective long-term treatment. We can do neurosurgery, but we can't help someone through the ravages of the fatal disease of addiction to find sobriety at no cost or at little cost. We have plenty of housing, more than enough, but people live on the streets. I know some choose to, and that's their preference, but most do not. At a time when our supermarkets are full of food, there are countless Americans in the Appalachian Mountains and in the inner cities whose kids go home to an empty fridge with nothing to eat in this country, the land of excess. So the scriptures today remind us that God's heart is for the poor. And Luke in particular emphasizes actual material and physical poverty. Matthew, in comparison, gives a more spiritual emphasis. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Luke simply says, blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Luke is often called the gospel of the poor, even though he himself was a physician. Just a couple days ago, we celebrated the feast of Saints Cosmas and Damian. They were twin brothers who lived in the 4th century under Diocletian persecution, when before the Roman Empire was Catholic, and they were known as the penniless ones because they were literally dirt poor. They treated the sick for free. And when they didn't have money to buy their medicine they needed to recover, Cosmas and Damian would even pay for that. And they were killed for their faith, because when they were brought to trial, it was proven they were Christian. Because who else in their right mind would be a physician who could be filthy rich, live absolute poverty, care for the sickest and the most abandoned on the streets, and even pay for their medicine, but a Christian? The Romans were convinced by their behavior they could be nothing else than a Christian. They were found guilty, and they were martyred for the faith. I wonder if on the day we die, there would be enough people to give testimony to show that we too are Christian by how we lived, by how generous we were with what we had. Even if we don't have much money, maybe you have the time to donate a couple hours a week to put together sack lunches. Maybe you have the time to talk to people on the streets and learn their name and welcome them into your heart and see them for the human being they are, someone's brother, someone's sister, someone's cousin, someone's child, and not the mentally ill man, deranged and screaming, filthy and dirty. I am very proud of our Samaritan House and the work of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Denver. It is one of the largest Catholic charity organizations in the country. But imagine if more Catholics did more for those who had less. Imagine if we raised $100 million for the homeless, for the addict, for the hungry. Imagine if we built a stadium to glorify God using billions to help those who are most in need. Then people would know that the kingdom of God has come. Then people would know that Christ is in our midst. God is very wealthy. He has infinite amounts of money. The problem is, he gave it all to you and me. So the question is, how will we spend it? After our own hearts, or in imitation of the heart of God.